Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/startupradio. That's vanta.com, spelled vanta.com/startupradio.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from startuprate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's number one Czech entrepreneurship radio called startup.radio. Today, I welcome Fritjof here with me. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, really well. Thank you. Hi, Joe.
Totally my pleasure to have you here. You are already a successful founder and entrepreneur here in Germany. We'll get to that soon. But you're here because you're an investor of the year 2023, selected by the German Startup Association, the German Startup Awards. Congratulations to that. And we agreed before that what you are doing is most specifically called green tech venture capital, right?
That's correct, yeah.
I was, as always, your LinkedIn profile will be linked down in the show notes. So wherever you're looking at this, wherever you're listening to this, go to medium.com/startuprate-io and you'll end up on our blog. Look for this interview, or if you're listening on your podcast or YouTube, go down here in the show notes. There is a link. I've seen you've done a lot of stuff. You are a member of the Sustainable Finance Committee of the German federal government. Most people here in and around Germany would know you as one of the founders of Jimdo. That is, I would call it a toolbox DIY, your own website.
Yeah, no, let's call it that, right? That's pretty much what we're doing. We enable small and medium-sized businesses to build up their own website, online shop, and much more.
Yeah, like Wix or Squarespace or stuff like this. And you are an Obama leader in Europe. There's a lot we have to talk about, but let us get started at the most known, most important part. Let us talk a little bit about how you started Jimdo, what you learned from there, and how you made the jump from doing basically a software startup to being green tech VC, because that has to be a fascinating story.
Yeah, you judge it. It's just my story.
How did you get started with Jimdo?
Yeah, quite early, to be honest. So, believe it or not, it was 1999. I was 16 years old and still in school. And like a school friend of mine asked me if I could imagine to want to found a company, and I raised my hand, and basically I was suddenly a founder of a company in the age of 16, still in school. And it was, to be honest, a lot of fun. So we did websites for other people and kind of stumbled into building web applications. And then we asked ourselves, hey, what would be more fun to do that? And actually more fun to us meant enabling our customers to build and maintain their own websites, like building your own product. And so we transformed kind of from an agency to a product company. And that was pretty much what we liked. And then we scaled it. And that was a lot of fun and a lot of learning, I would say.
I would have my first question here, because we are almost about the same age bracket. Apparently, you're 3 years younger than I am. but I've known a lot of people in the late 1990s, early 2000s, like two or three people who were good with computers in high school or studied computer science, who did the same. How did you make this step from being an agency, being like two or three people coding mm-hmm. websites for other people? How did you do this step to really think mm-hmm. it in terms of a product company? How was this? How did you evolve that way?
Mm. Yeah, I think I, to be honest, it was not really an informed decision. It just happened. And it came that for myself personally, I really liked the idea of simplifying complex problems into a flow, into a user interface to make things really simple, which used to be super complex back in the time. And I think now website building has been somehow a commodity, website building tools. But back then, like breaking things into simple steps and making it more accessible for everyone to build a website and also for medium-sized or small-sized companies was really new. And so word of mouth picked up. And it was like we were one of the first companies which then switched to a freemium model. And I think that really paid off. Really worked like a bliss. And then it's about product excellence and iterating on the product. And so we scaled really the company from three people on a barn where I came from. So my co-founders moved into the rooms of my older brothers and scaled it all the way to a few hundred people, which was a lot of fun and obviously a lot of learning, since a company with three boys on a farm is much different than a company that is a decent size.
Mm-hmm. And then you basically, as you said, you build it up. We skip a lot of steps in the development of Jimdo. You guys are then very successful. And mm-hmm. was it also like a unconscious decision to go from here into being a green tech VC? I would be mm-hmm. interested how your interest in the space started mm-hmm. and when you really decided, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to get out mm-hmm. of the company that I co-founded at age of mm-hmm. below 20 or something.
Yeah. So like to put things into perspective, I did that company for 18 years. So for a real long time, you could say. And then after that period of time with a couple of hundred people, I started to feel like, hey, probably there's more to explore. And my co-founder happily said, hey, he wants to continue run the company. And that gave me the opportunity to think new of what I want to do. And then I kind of got a super unexpected offer. So another friend of mine approached me and asked me if I could see myself traveling the world with a camera crew and basically filming a 10 documentary series about founders worldwide. And you know, like after 18 years of building software, I was like, yeah, happily, I do that. And then suddenly we worked together with five journalists from DW, Deutsche Welle. And that was, we are super new. And so we thought about how can we tell the stories of these 10 episodes more interesting. And so we took on the idea of let us take 10 out of the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals as shells for each of the episodes. And whenever you want to present the solution of a founder, you also have to deep dive into the problem, right? And so to me, spending 120 days and thinking about when interviewing people about climate change, of plastic pollution, child labor, I don't know, all these bigger topics, housing, was somehow really unexpected for, I guess, a person like me being super privileged since the first company was really successful already and gave me much different perspective on life and where I want to spend my time and my resources. So it was quite easy to decide on what not to do anymore and what are the problems I really want to work on. And to be honest, it was a super life-changing experience since, like for 120 days, you observe the patterns of the world economy, and how it's creating winners and losers, and how it's creating problems somewhere else, which are directly connected to our economy back here. And then, that gave me so much food for thought, to be honest, to reflect on what I've seen. And I'm super thankful that I was given the opportunity to see so much in such a short time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know how that feels. It was like also like under focus for me when I was working for the Chinese government, seeing all this impact back in the days when I was working there as an intern. And what did you do next when you came back? You had all those thoughts in your mind, and then?
Yeah. I mean, it was clear for me that I'm not just going to build the next software as a service company. So I was clear that I want to work on the problems I've seen before. And then I was clear for me that I want to use my time and resources to help the founders or help to develop ideas which really make a difference. And then I was lucky enough to meet a really good scientist, and she opened my eyes to life cycle assessments, which is a method to quantify all the mass and energy balances throughout the life cycle of a product. So basically, if you think about life cycle, you think about where is the material coming from, how much time do how much energy do I need to extract something, how far do I have to transport it, where things are assembled, and then all the way to how often is a product being used? Is a single use? Is it okay with the sound? Yeah, I guess. Okay, and then how much energy do you need each time to the end of life scenario? What happens after the life of the product? And so there's a pretty precise method to really to calculate all that. I mean, it's a lot of work, but if you do it for an idea of a startup and for the baseline scenario, the economy today, you are. You can basically see the difference if it really makes a huge difference, yes or no. And so that is what we've been doing. And that was such an eye-opening moment for me that I thought, hey, this really makes a lot of a difference, right? So to really precisely know if a product is part of a solution or it just pretends to be. And so then the idea arose in my head saying, okay, we should build a fund which is only allocating money to the companies that, if they scale, really make a lot of difference. And so that was kind of the initial idea to Planet A, where you allocate money to ideas where science says this is really making a huge difference. And so, yeah, that is how Planet A came to be. And then was lucky enough to meet a lot of super smart people that said they want to work with us. Or work with me in building this up. And so, yeah, lucky enough that we succeeded so far. And whenever winning this prize, I really think it's us as a team has won the prize, not me personally.
Mm-hmm. I've also seen that you invested of one of our former guests, Traceless Materials. Of course, we link down here in the show notes to the interview. And you've been talking about how those investments will make an impact. So I assume your due diligence is quite a little bit different from show me a business plan, show me a profit margin, show me a growth forecast, and that's it. How do you approach the evaluation of a startup?
Yeah, so it is different and not different at the same time. So
can you repeat that as a quote for our interview again? It's different.
Basically we're looking at two factors, and this is how also Planet A is built as an organization. We have a business side and we have a scientific side. And what's to be said about Planet A, that science has the power to say no to any deal. So basically, if science doesn't say this is really a game changing idea, this is really making a difference, we won't do it, like if you don't agree, right? So basically we look through two lenses, if you so will, the business lens as normal we see with a normal return expectation, like quite normal, you look at all of that. And then additionally, we also look through the angle of the planetary boundaries, quantifying impact. So it's really both, because the solutions we search for or we invest in are ones which also need to be a valid business model. I mean, you need a lot of money to scale these ideas, and you can only scale things really, really quickly if you can also make them really investable. And therefore, we're looking for the ideas which kind of really fulfill both angles.
Mm-hmm. And I've also seen from your portfolio that your companies tend to be a little bit more on the hardware side than on the software side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's both. So it's software, it's hardware, and we have one category which is kind of, I mean, it's not new, it's hybrid, which is kind of software-enabled hardware. And so when it comes to kind of tackling or thinking about the problems kind of we have, then it's relatively clear software alone won't do it, right? So we need to invest into hardware in order to build and to change processes in our industry, in the world's industry. Otherwise, we won't do it. And so it clearly involves hardware. And I think this is something we need to acknowledge if we talk about climate change or the planetary boundaries, that we need to develop and change processes of our economy. And this involves a lot of hardware. So we need to invest and be able to invest into hardware. Because if you only invest into software, obviously, this is not enough.
Hmm. You just talked about planetary boundaries. When we talked before this interview, we actually realized that we just surpassed the world overshot day, where mankind mm-hmm. is using up more resources than the world can regenerate. What is your take on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we have several crises at the same time. And I mean, we're pretty aware of the climate crisis, but we also have, for example, a biodiversity crisis. We have the hugest loss in biodiversity since ever and at such a fast pace. And so the concept of the planetary boundaries looks at the world and of kind of as safe operating limits, which would be what is regenerating within 1 year. And so if you look in different angles on how the planet is doing, for example, freshwater use, land use, biodiversity, climate change, or entry of novel entries into the atmosphere, you will find that we are in different stages on these different measures. And so what the planetary boundaries is really showing is where are the safe operating limits and where do we need to get better and where we already have surpassed the safe operating limits. And so it gives you a more sophisticated view on the different crises. And I think it's really important that we don't trade the one crisis for another, right? So it is having this more holistic view on the problems, which I think we should be taking. And that's the planetary boundaries. Obviously, normally, the things you're doing for the climate crisis is also good for the planet itself, but having a broader view is really important.
Mm-hmm. To get the boring stuff out of the way, you invest in Series A investments, $500,000 to up to €4 million. But
that we're starting earlier from pre-seed to Series A.
Pre-seed to Series A. I see. Pre-seed to Series A, $500,000 to $4 million.
Yep.
But I would be more curious because you are not the average VC. You are not investing in the average software startup. So how is your process to get to the right startups? I totally assume you also get a lot of pitches, also mm-hmm. a lot of lost pitches. Somebody's looking for pre-seed funding for his or her mm-hmm. fintech, completely not related to what you do. You just reply with a nice email, sorry, nothing for us. Mm-hmm. If you take that away, there is, I assume, not such a big lot of relevant startups. How do you source your deals?
Yeah, so like you've different channels. So people apply with via our website, and they do it a lot, actually. So we can't kind of, like, to be honest, I'm blown away myself. Like, we now have seen over 6,000 startups, which I think is amazing, that there's so many people are working on these topics. And, like, not everything of that is relevant, but a huge chunk. So a lot of people are actually using their time and resources to work on something, like, really important, which I think gives me a lot of hope that people pick the topic. And then second is we have a lot of kind of really well-known and like successful founders that have built unicorns and other like really amazing companies, and they're invested in our fund. And so these people actually kind of quite often forward interesting pitches to us, which I think is super nice. And so teaming up there really makes a lot of sense. And then third, since we really look scientifically on the world, it is about also kind of looking where the biggest problems and where are the biggest problems and where are potential solutions, which we look into. And then we actively go out and look for who's doing good stuff in a particular area. And then we approach people as well. So it's really different channels we use. Then it's really about building a portfolio of people that address the problems in a really good way.
Mm-hmm. And now, of course, the next question is, how did you get, do you get to the problems? Because you could look in certain spaces, find people who have, who are solving big problems, but how do you decide this is really a problem for us that we want to invest in?
Yeah. So, as I said, we're looking through the angle of the planetary boundaries. So basically saying, okay, we're only going to look at ideas which are doing a significant difference. And so we do quantify that in four areas, which would be climate mitigation and greenhouse gas equivalence. It would be waste mitigation, resource savings, and also biodiversity protection. So we do look at these factors whenever we look at startups. And then we do invest in some sense quite broadly, like from housing, new materials, manufacturing processes, food, energy storage, mobility, lots of different things, right? Because the problem of the like our economy surpassing the planetary boundaries is also an accumulation of all these different activities we have on the world, right? So it is not the one solution. So we need to look quite broadly, and then what we do is like we look at what are the huge chunks and what are the really the areas where we need to innovate in order to get there. And so this is kind of why we end up actually doing a lot of B2B deals where kind of the volume is super high and super innovative deep tech solutions where it's about changing whole systems really, instead of just a minor improvement in something, which also needs to happen, right? No judgment in that. But for us, with the thesis of Planet A, it's like we're looking for those game-changing ideas in kind of in industries which produce a lot of CO2, for example. And then we look into what are potential solutions to that. So quite driven from scientific angle, saying, okay, where are the biggest problems and how can that be done differently?
That is really an interesting approach. Given that we could talk for a few more hours, but I would like to limit this to a few more minutes. Right. I would be interested in what founders do wrong to screw off their first interview, their first pitch. What do they do wrong? Because I've heard in the past that the biggest thesis for successful entrepreneurs that I've heard so far is that first approach the investor, get a contact, and down the road, pitch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, now I would get back to how we build as an organization. So we actually like searching for the ones making a significant difference, but that comes together by science and business. And so it's really about thinking both for us. And I know it's super tough and it's both things to really care about. But if you want to found something to make a contribution to the world's biggest problems, I think it's not only the business model. You really have to think about, is the solution I'm building or the innovation I'm doing, is it really doing something significantly better? And so I would then say, right from the start, it would be super good to spend some time on kind of a rough estimation, is that really moving the needle in that area? And not only think of the business model, but also think about like the mass and energy balances of a product, is it really way better? And I know it's a lot to ask, but I do believe that in the future, there must be a correlation between the startups which are doing significantly better for the planet and also the financial outlook of those companies, because we need to account in the future for the real true cost of things. And if you are the one which kind of invented a process which is leading to the same result but with much less CO2 emissions, those companies need to be the winners, right? And so I think it's a double good exercise, not only for getting VC money, it's a really good exercise to build something meaningful that makes a difference. And you should do that from the start.
What I'm taking with me is, again, do your homework, get your list of potential investors together, and listen, read how they're doing their due diligence. For example, in your case, it would be the science side and the business side have to match. So that means you're not only looking for Excel sheets, best would be also for papers or scientific research that the startups can give you on an NDA and show to make a difference.
Perfect. And you can also check out our website. So we try to put it out what we look for in order to kind of really spend meaningful time with the ones where there's an overlap in the thesis and the idea.
Mm-hmm. Of course, everybody who'd like to learn more, they can go down here on the show notes. They can not only see your LinkedIn profile, but also we link the type form where the startups can straight pitch. But again, do your homework. Make sure you are the right fit for Planet A. Fridtjof, again, congratulations to the award. Thank you very much for this enlightening interview.
Thanks. Hey, thanks, Joe.
My pleasure. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.